Hey, Scruffy, you need a haircut? Got an idea for you. Go to MaryToddHairCo.com, find yourself an appointment, and get yourself a haircut. They also have hot lather shaves and some of the best colorists in the city. Don't believe me? Pick up your iPhone and go, hey, Siri, where can I get the best men's or women's haircut in Atlanta? Guess what? It's going to pop up Mary Todd Hair Co. Also, Mary Todd has a custom line of shampoo, pomades, beard oils, all handmade using the finest ingredients available. Did I say they're produced locally? Well, they are. Check them out at MaryToddHairCo.com/products.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
You are awake.
100%.
Finally. See us, one. He did it. Go back in. He's still out. Take this.
Who is Judy?
You've already met Judy.
What do you mean I've met Judy? Who is Judy? Who is Judy?
She's wrapped in plastic.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Ira Malkin, Steph Swain, and Jeff Leboff.
Does that mean the show's starting?
Yes.
Okay, stop drinking and eating.
Hey, welcome to Radio Labyrinth. This is the second episode of the Film Buff series, which we don't really have a set schedule for, but we do from time to time. Joining me today is my usual host that I work underneath.
Well, not physically.
Sometimes.
Yeah, true.
I am a power bottom.
That's true.
We have Eric Von Hessler, and he is the host of the Von Hessler Doctrine. I'm sure you all know that. And English Nick.
He's at the river, too.
Who is on the river.
The river. And
he does a lot of things.
Von Hessler Doctrine is on the podcast.
Owns a fancy tea room.
Dr. Bombay's. It's not as fancy as the Ritz, but it's pretty fancy.
Fancier than the tea room that I own.
You still really? That's a public thing? You own that?
Well.
I thought that was something you didn't want people to know.
It's a basement.
I think that his tea place, Dr. Bombay's incredible underwater something, I don't know.
Dr. Bombay's underwater tea party
right.
in Candler Park.
Too long. But.
I like it.
Dr. Bombay's is what
Dr.
we call
Bombay's.
It.
Dr. Bombay's.
Dr. Bombay!
It's named after him.
You know it's not.
Yes, it is. From
Bewitched.
Yeah, that was my business partner's idea in the beginning, yeah, because she, as a kid she loved
Bewitched.
You
went to McMahon and Tate Advertising?
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, yeah, he's from England.
You know, Sam!
He's not going to know everything about the
Bewitched. Have a cup of tea.
We're talking on this episode of the finale. In fact, all of, what is it, season three?
Return? Well, some people call it season three.
Twin Peaks, The Return.
It's called The Return, yeah.
Yeah.
And according to Eric, it's an 18-hour movie.
That's how it was put together.
Mm-hmm.
It was put together as an 18-hour movie. And then edited, broken into not episodes, but Lynch and Frost called them parts.
Parts.
Yeah. But it was conceived as an 18-hour movie. And you have to remember that David Lynch has not made a movie since 2007 with Inland Empire. So to have 18 hours.
Right.
So that's 9 2-hour movies, if I have my math correct.
I want to ask Eric a question. I know we're huge fans. Both of us are huge fans. We drive the podcast listeners crazy with it sometimes.
Yeah, this is great.
But
thank you, Tim, because
you're welcome.
I don't have to run my people away by...
You have an outlet.
Yes, talking about Twin Peaks.
For me, in 1989, 1990, whenever it was, the first season came
out. I think
it
was 90 or
91. That was my first exposure to David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hadn't seen
Blue Velvet or The Elephant Man or Eraserhead.
So that was my first thing. And then after that, I just couldn't get enough. So what was it, your first?
No. The first thing I saw by Lynch was probably Blue Velvet, and then that made me interested in him, so I went back to Eraserhead and The Elephant Man. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember The Elephant Man when I was a teenager. That was the I don't know how big of a movie it was, but there was a summer or something where everybody was saying, "I am not an animal."
He did The Elephant Man?
He did The Elephant Man. It was his second movie.
Yeah, with John Hurt.
Oscar winner.
Mel Brooks was the producer. Mel Brooks saw Eraserhead and gave David Lynch the opportunity to, you know, have this big budget, you know, for the time.
The Elephant Man was a comedy.
The Elephant Man was not. It was a true story of, what's the guy's name? John Merrick.
John Merrick.
So I went back to, The Elephant Man, and I mean, to first Eraserhead, and I could not make it through Eraserhead the first time because I didn't understand and I didn't quite get what was going on, I have to be honest with you. And that baby-like thing that just kept
going. Disturbing as
hell. Making that noise. Have you ever seen it, Tim?
Yeah.
So,
not an easy movie to watch.
No, it pushed me away. As a matter of fact, my oldest son once told me about Eraserhead. He was watching it, and somewhere in the middle of it, in his mind, this is what he heard. You don't have to keep watching this. So I was kind of turned off by it. But then, but a few years later, I went back and watched it again, and I really started to connect with what was going on. And that it was okay to have that initial response, which we'll talk about with why it's okay to be disappointed with the end of Twin Peaks and all of that.
Right.
So then, Eraserhead, then the Elephant Man, and then Dune. I didn't understand what went wrong.
I like Dune.
Dune's a good movie.
I like Dune.
You think Dune's a good movie?
I enjoyed it.
It got panned.
Oh, yeah.
Lynch considers it his only failure. He's the only thing that he'll say that was bad.
He really liked Kyle MacLachlan, though, didn't he?
Yeah, that's where he started. I think it was Kyle MacLachlan's first big deal.
Blue Velvet?
Blue Velvet came after. So I think from David Lynch, not that I'm an expert on David Lynch, I'm just a fan, but I think he learned the lessons on Dune, which were...
He didn't have Final Cut on it.
He didn't have Final Cut, and he had a lot of people. It was a big budget deal for its time, sci-fi classic. And I think that he, after that, said, well, I'm just not going to make movies anymore unless I have Final
Control.
And that's where Blue Velvet came a couple of years later, and sort of his career started going from there. And then Twin Peaks was actually the next thing he did, I believe, because his next movie after that, I think, is Wild at Heart, which was after the first season of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
I think.
And then Fire Walk With Me, and then
was it Lost Highway? Take that long to make Lost Highway.
Lost Highway came out before
Mulholland Drive.
Yeah,
Lost Highway came out when I was living in L.A., so I think it was probably 97 or so. And then Mulholland Drive, I saw in the theater in Atlanta, so it was 2000 or 2001.
What?
Yeah, 2000 or 2001.
And it's What's-Her-Face, who was Dougie's wife.
Naomi Watts.
Yes.
Who's amazing in both roles.
Right.
But I think in Mulholland Drive, that's...
A little sexier.
Well, you know.
There's a couple great scenes.
I've gotten older, too, but... you're talking about the lesbian scene.
Yes.
It's amazing. But Naomi Watts, I think that's her best work that I've ever seen, is Mulholland Drive. She's amazing in that. And that's an amazing movie. And I think that some people who checked out of Twin Peaks The Return very early on because they liked the old show.
They were expecting the old show.
And if you had watched Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, Inland Empire, which is, you know, a chore for me.
What is the Inland Empire?
Inland Empire was, well, it's very difficult. If you think...
Well, I know the movie. I mean, what? There's an area, isn't it?
Oh, California? Inland Empire is in, it's around L.A. It's the, I think that, I'm not sure, but I don't think like Bakersfield would be in the Inland Empire. It's not beach centric.
Okay. All right.
LA area. Now I want to look it up because I don't want to be wrong because people will say, hey, you're wrong.
Eric's dumb.
And we have these machines. All we got to do is look it up. Inland Empire.
Check
we find
it
out
out
where it is. But Inland Empire is a very difficult one. And it's the only one that Lynch lost money on.
Okay.
It's the only time he ever lost money for people who invested in his movie. And that was the last thing he made. I think that was 2007, somewhere in 2006. And so you got a guy who's, to me, if not one of the best living directors
easily
on the planet who couldn't get anything green lit. I don't think. I'm assuming he had ideas.
And what's he been? What did he do between that and Twin Peaks? Television.
Well, you know, he does multimedia stuff.
Okay.
I think he put out a couple of records, a couple of CDs, music.
Mm-hmm.
He's always painting and sculpting. He makes furniture.
Oh, I didn't know.
So he's always doing something creative, and I think he just went off and did stuff that way. Although I'm sure he had ideas, I'm just assuming that he couldn't get anything green lit after Inland Empire, which even for fans, hardcore fans, Inland Empire is a tough one.
After Inland Empire, I was like, I just don't know what I just watched. And I have moments of that with Lynch all the time, but with Inland, it was just all the time, all the way through. And then when there were so many different characters changing, it was just, I mean, it's all dream state.
I just want to say that the Inland Empire, according to Wikipedia, is a metropolitan area and region in Southern California. The term may be used to refer to the cities of Western Riverside County and Southwestern San Bernardino County.
San Bernardino.
I always have trouble saying that.
When I
broader definition will also include Eastern Los Angeles.
County. Oh, okay. East LA.
That's it. So,
so what I was going to say is when Twin Peaks was announced that they were going to do a season or that it was upcoming, I said to myself, I'm going to go back and watch seasons 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have a lot of time for that, so I decided not to. And then it came on, the very first episode, I sat there and watched it, and I had to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
Because it's not the kind of thing, the way I watch TV now, it didn't capture me and keep me glued. Second time I watched it, I sat there patient, you know, and just put the phone down, put the computer away.
You have to.
No distractions. And I got hooked. And the reason it hooked me, and I told you this before, was that it was, you're watching TV the way you're supposed to be watching TV. Episodic, serial television that you carry over to the next week. You anticipate the next week coming up.
You talk about with your friends what you saw from what does it mean.
Right. It's not just going to a blog immediately after the show or tweeting, oh my God, the dragon got killed. You know, that kind of thing. And the pacing of the show calmed my nerves and allowed me to sit and you know, if you watch an old television series like Columbo or any shows shot in that era, the cameras aren't moving all over the place.
Right, yeah.
They're static shots and the story is allowed to progress. And that's what's so great to me.
Yeah,
about
it doesn't. Well, I always tell people with David Lynch, the reason that works better the second time for a lot of people is because you don't have expectations anymore. You know what's what's going to happen. You know where it's going to go. So you're not telling it what it's supposed to do. You can't with David Lynch. It's the ride. You know, you get on a roller coaster. You're not looking to get to the end.
No,
right?
No.
I mean, it's the experience of being on the roller coaster, and that I think is with any kind of David Lynch stuff. From his best stuff to his stuff that maybe isn't his best stuff, you have to go into it not making any demands on what it should be.
No.
But saying, you know what, David Lynch, I got a couple hours. I'm in the mood to get on this roller coaster. Now zoom me, flip me, slow me down for a while, speed me up, whatever you want to do. You have to look at it as the ride is the thing. You know, the whole Zen thing of, you know, the journey, not the destination.
I've seen Blue Velvet at least 10 times in my life since it came out. I still don't remember the ending. I just remember. I don't.
You know, I was reading something about the ending the other day, and it was almost like it was a spoiler, and I had to remind myself, you've seen this movie four times.
So, right.
You know, right. Yeah. There are some people that work here that were big Twin Peaks fans, and they jumped out very early on.
Right.
And I feel bad. I feel bad that they couldn't have the experience that I had, and I know that Nick had, and you had. I don't know how to make – I would never try to talk somebody into being a David Lynch fan. That being said, we have to give credit to Mark Frost, too, who is co-creator and co-writer of the first one and this one. He wasn't involved in Firewalk with Me. What I would say to you is probably watching Firewalk with Me would have been more of a primer for this –
absolutely.
For the return than the actual first season turned out to be. But
there's so many nuggets in the first two seasons. Even the second season, which wasn't directed by Lynch, there's still so many nuggets of great stuff in there. You know, when Laura's cousin shows up, Maddie, it's just all awesome.
Who played her cousin?
She did. Same actress.
Charlie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just put glasses
just
on
brunette.
Her. Brunette with glasses.
That was like Patty Duke?
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of, you know, it's a style that I like. I like, and I don't know if I can even explain this, but I like movies. I like film that doesn't... I like all kinds of films, but I especially like a style.
It doesn't pander to the audience?
Well, not so much that, but will remind you that this is a film. That mm-hmm. this is not real. You know, I mean, there's really good movies that are gritty and they're real, but for the most part, if I'm watching a movie, my life is gritty enough and real enough, and I watch the news. And so I like getting out of that. I'm a big fan of Orson Welles, and he would do the same thing. There's always this, tell a story. If you're going to tell a story visually, then do it. Do stories that could only really be told in that medium. Like, do them in a way, so you don't want to have a lot of narration, for instance, because then you're telling a story in kind of a way that's done in books.
Yes.
So if you do that, it's a little bit of a cheat. There are great movies that have narration. I mean, Goodfellas has some narration about sure. thing, and Casino. But it's a little bit of a cheat because you're using a way of telling a story in a book. David Lynch is one of these directors that when he does film, he tells the story through that medium and in a way that you could only do with that medium. So sometimes the shot lingers a little bit longer than you expect it to, but rather than going, oh, come on, like I say, you just have to put yourself in the hands of Lynch and say, okay, I'm going this ride with you.
You have to immerse yourself.
To me, this ride of Twin Peaks The Return, I am completely and totally satisfied. If there's more, I will be ecstatic.
Well, satisfied in what way? Satisfied in what way? How did the ending?
Okay, we'll get to the ending.
Yeah.
That David Lynch, a great director who hasn't made a film since 2006, was handed 18 hours of film.
Prime time.
For me to be able to just soak that up. And he delivered to me exactly what I expected. I was telling people before it started, you remember me talking around that this is not going to be the old Twin Peaks. I knew it. You don't snap out of Mulholland Drive and Lost Highway and go back to, you know, the more soap operatic parody type stuff they were doing in season one and season two. And I knew it was going to be an extension of him.
It was a culmination of all of his work from the last many years.
That is another thing I don't know if everybody picked up on.
Bits and pieces.
I don't want to be like, well, I saw it and you didn't. But maybe everybody did pick up
you
on
it. You can, because it's film buffs.
Yes, okay. We can be elitist.
Yeah, I don't care.
So he's 70-something years old. I don't know his exact age, maybe 72 or something like that. Hasn't made a movie since 2006. He's thinking, maybe this is the last thing I ever do. And he put elements of really everything that he's done on film, and I think even other mediums. There's a scene midway through the season where Gordon Cole is in the hotel room in South Dakota, and before Albert knocks on the door, he's sketching.
Uh-huh.
And you look at it, and it's David Lynch. He's getting every little thing, all kinds of eraser head visual type stuff.
Right.
The floor from the Red Room was already from Eraserhead from before.
Mm-hmm.
Those weird bell-like industrial-looking things, very Eraserhead-like. Now, I say that, and I don't know, and I have to go back and look and see if there's anything from Dune. I don't think he considers...
Sting.
I don't think he considers Dune to really be a proper part of his catalog.
I mean, there's some of that metal... like the bells you're talking about. There's some of that in Dune with the industrial-looking stuff.
All that industrial. So there are elements of Blue Velvet certainly were in there. I mean, the Red character was a, you know, kind of a Frank Booth type of, kind of character. But more than that, I mean, even visually, there was a lot of Blue Velvet type stuff. Certainly Wild at Heart type stuff was in there.
The car.
I was thinking, and Lost Highway is where David Lynch starts really playing with doppelgangers and all the, you know, people switching and becoming another person.
What do they call it, tulpas?
Well, there's doppelgangers and a tulpas, two different things.
Oh, okay.
A tulpa is
manufactured
out of a mind, and through the will of the mind becomes manifest. But so once he started playing with Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive and Inland Empire with people moving around in different forms and bodies, a lot of that is in there. And I was watching, and I kept looking for Is it all there? And I was thinking, because the straight story, I should have mentioned Elephant Man. There was some imagery that was much like Elephant Man in there. The Straight Story, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a great movie.
1999 movie. It's awesome.
But it's about a guy. It's based on a true story. It's about a guy who gets on a lawnmower to go visit.
Yeah.
And I think the actor won an Oscar and then killed himself. But So that was a very Lynchian and non-Lynchian kind of movie. And I'm thinking, well, where's that? And then we got to a few episodes ago, parts, he likes to say, where Nadine walks 5 miles with a shovel
to see Ed,
to tell Ed that he's free.
Yeah.
And there's like the cross cutting of her walking, and then she's walking again in a different place. And to me, anyway, I thought, oh, well, it's complete, because I don't care about Dune, but it's like, oh, there's the straight. I hope it's not the last thing he does, but I think he's seen it as magnum opus. I'm throwing everything in there. There are scripts of his that haven't been made that are public. One's called Ronnie Rocket, I think. There's all kinds of elements from that script that made its way in. So he looked at this as a canvas of, well, we're going to do Twin Peaks, but I haven't made a movie since 2006. I'm going to put in every kind of idea that's been fanciful to me. And so it all worked. It all worked for me. I don't know if I just love him so much that I don't have as critical an eye as I should, but who cares? I'm a fan, and I just enjoyed the whole ride.
Keep talking.
Are you going to the bathroom?
Yep.
I got to take this over. I got to talk to English Nick. This guy doesn't have a gallbladder, and he doesn't have ability.
So we lost the host of the show.
Yeah, he goes to the bathroom whenever, which is very Lynchian. I have to be honest with you. That moment right there was sort of a thing that would happen.
But did he really leave? That's the thing.
I think he really left. I don't know if the person coming back
in this dimension
is the same Tim Andrews.
Tim Andrews'
left.
Bladder is full.
Yeah.
But in another dimension, he may not even have a bladder.
That didn't look like bladder trouble. You know what it is? He doesn't have a gallbladder, and then he drinks coffee. He starts this off with coffee.
I gave him that White Castle burger.
And boom, that's what it is. It doesn't help. Grease. That's what gallbladder, I think, does.
It gets rid of that. Yeah.
It helps you deal with that.
It's a filter, right?
And so when the grease hits him, zoom, it's like.
And he's never gone for very long. He's real quick. I mean, it's only 3 doors away, but
I gotta tell you something.
It's got to be a very quick release for
him. Don't ever go to, it's funny, because when I was doing my last little explanation there, I thought I was making sense. And I kept looking at him, and he looked like disinterested or weird. I had no idea that his body was rebelling against him, and there's nothing you can do. So let me ask you a question, English Nick.
Yeah, as the second host of the show. What's this called? Movie
like
Buff.
Mark Frost is taking over here. So I'm the co-host. So did you see Twin Peaks in England when it came out, or did you see it when you came here?
No, all in England as it was happening. I was in,
and you could relate to it as a, what were you? 20 or 19 or something?
So what, 90? I was 20, 23.
And you could relate to it as something happening in a,
I totally did, because, you have to remember, you grew up with a lot of American TV culture in the UK. And it was just something
You saw the police procedurals and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just something where immediately I'd never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
I had bandmates, me and the bass player in this band I was in, we were just so enamored by it that we would like, oh, it's Monday night, whatever night it was on. If we were rehearsing, we'd leave and go to his house and watch it. And it was like,
you know, what's funny is looking back on it, it was appointment stuff for us. So me and my friends,
me too.
It was same thing then as it is now. We talked for a week, what happened, what's going on, having our theories, and all of that stuff. And I loved it so much the first two seasons. But I didn't really notice how bad the second season got for a while it was going on, because I was so into it. And I think now a lot of people completely blow off the second season, which is a mistake. There's really all the stuff up to the reveal of who killed Laura Palmer, and then a couple episodes, and then it gets really funky for 4 or 5episodes.
Yeah, the whole James Hurley off on the motorcycle.
A big mistake. But I think sometimes people throw in the whole Confederate thing. I thought the Confederate thing was hilarious.
Yes.
I thought it was wonderful.
Because then again, it's Lynch going, okay, let's go back and change history.
Yeah, right.
Through the eyes of Benjamin Horne,
exactly.
Who's losing his mind.
Yeah, but they did do a couple of things in that second season that were repetitive. Like, for example, Dr. Jacoby basically has the same remedy for Ben Horne that he does for Nadine, which is they're both going through their their weird alter ego things. Just let them do it. Play along and get them through it.
Yep.
And so there was some laziness that was going on there.
And also, I never really thought about it at the time, but now Audrey Horn had to grow up in that second season to look after her dad, you know?
Yes, exactly.
We saw her become an adult.
Did you know that Audrey Horn in the canon of Twin Peaks, I found this out a couple weeks ago, maybe I should have known, that she caused the problem with her brother Johnny? When he was 9 years old, she pushed him down a flight of stairs.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Who was the guy in the jail cell that had blood coming out of his cheek?
We don't know.
Oh, so that was never clarified.
That was never clarified. It was never.
God.
You all right?
Boy,
you
I,
know,
made
I was.
It.
I was just telling. I was just telling a couple things to Nick. One is, you don't have a gallbladder.
No.
And he gives you a greasy cheeseburger, and you're drinking coffee as we get started.
Yep.
You at least need to know your own body.
Well, I thought maybe I'd be able to make it.
Yeah. Well, Whoa. Boy, was that wrong.
I had to clean the seat off.
Oh, my God. Well, I told him.
So you had a serious, you had to go for a serious.
Oh,
no,
yeah, yeah.
No, I was, because I thought I was being like brilliant in my, I'm taking apart David Lynch's cinema world and deconstructing it and telling how he put each little part. And so I'm looking at Tim's face and I thought, is this totally disinterested? I had no idea.
But no, I was trying to concentrate.
Now I know. Hindsight is.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Remember, when it comes to his body, the past.
How many times a day does that happen to you?
Not very often.
Because that's like a once, I mean, if I'm not near, if let's say I'm driving in bad traffic, like yesterday, I had to go out to the burbs, came back. It took me an hour to get back into town.
Yeah.
And I really needed to urinate by the time I got to 17th Street, but it took me another 20 minutes to get home.
Yeah,
like,
pal.
That's the worst thing.
I don't think
this
was urine.
No. the consistency was the same.
Oh, please.
What?
You're disgusting.
Well, I had to go or I would have shit my pants. All right, sorry to the audience.
That's what he wanted to know. His first question was, what was the guy with the goo coming out of his mouth?
Yeah. I don't know. A lot like you.
I got to say, man. I got to say.
Shut up.
The second to last episode when the bad deputy gets out of the cell and Andy comes down there. I was edge of the seat.
No, that
right
was
there.
17 was unbelievable. Oh. You know, but I was thinking about it. If you think about Andy. And he goes down there. Basically, if you really think about what's going on there, now he saw that vision from the fireman, and the fireman put him. You know,
yeah.
We have to. He was going to protect Nido. You know, the eyeless lady. And so yes, there's a reason that he has to get her up there. But if you think about everything that was going on in the sheriff's station
at that point,
where he was taking them to, he said, "I have to get you all upstairs." Why? To put you in the same room with Ultimate Evil Showdown?
Yeah.
Bob? It's not really the best place to take people to get them to be. I got to protect you. Let's get you all upstairs in this room where there's going to be an ultimate showdown between the forces of good and evil.
That's
but
insane.
He knew that he had to get the boy, the Freddy with the green.
Right. Now, what was that thing? That was Bob.
That was Bob.
That was Bob.
That,
right. came
that
out,
was Bob.
Yeah.
Now, and that goes to what Lynch was doing a lot with. He was dealing a lot with actors who had died.
Yeah.
And many actors in this died just after. I mean, Miguel Ferrer never saw this.
No.
Catherine Coulson, the log lady, never saw this, which is astounding, you know, really, if you think about it. And, you know, some people thought that Miguel Ferrer was a little stiff. He probably was. I think he had throat cancer or something at the time.
He was very sick.
Dealing with it.
They saw him and Lynch had some great interaction though, man.
But the way that he dealt with, Don Davis died years ago, Garland Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Nance, who discovered the body, he found a way to bring him back and have a body double fishing off the pier at the end.
Jack Nance was killed in the bar fight, wasn't he?
He killed in a donut shop.
Like somebody
he was
him.
He was beat up outside of a donut shop and died, I think, 24 hours later or something like that. David Bowie, of course. And so when you see this guy, Frank Silva, who played Bob, who's dead.
Right.
He dealt with him by putting him inside this orb. He dealt with David Bowie by using some old footage with a new voice and then putting him in an industrial
teapot
steam kettle thing. So, I mean, he really did work around, like he used people who are no longer here.
Yeah.
I mean, so that was pretty ingenious way to keep Frank Silva in there.
Right.
And write a story around it, you know. And I know that people, for the most part, are happy pretty much with episode 17 and then unhappy with episode 18.
Well, you could have ended it at 7. If you had not watched episode 18, if you had just said, wow, happy ending, I'm good.
It's kind of a happy ending because she did disappear from his hand. It's kind of weird. They showed that same scene in episode 17 and episode 18.
But in episode 17, once she disappears, or is it before she disappears or right afterwards, they just focus on the trees for a really long time.
Yeah.
In 18, there wasn't that focus.
Right. He goes back to the Red Room. Yeah. He goes back to the Red Room. And I watched it again last night. I didn't watch all 2 hours. I picked it up. I just said, I got it. Before I talk about this tomorrow, that ending really starts in 17. And so basically what I did is I watched from the point that the fight ended on 17 and then straight through 18 again.
Yeah, I need to do that again.
And there's, you know, there's, I think, you know, he's, I think that once he gets back into the Red Room in episode 18, I think everything is the same from episode 1 in the Red Room.
She's whispering in his ear.
No, she's not there. That's the difference, though, is that he looks at the chair and she's not there.
Got you.
But the other stuff that happens, Leland says, find Laura. That happens in episode 1.
Yep.
Is it future?
Yeah, or is it past? Like, that was in the episode 1, wasn't it?
Past, yes.
Yeah. So
I think understand.
So the question is now, when we were in episode 1, had all these events already happened? Yeah, I mean, so it's a. But I got more on that if you ask about it. But
please.
I think of, well, I don't want to dominate English.
No, it's fine. No, you
much
have
of this.
I am a huge fan, but there's things that you've taught me along the way about certain things I didn't know, because there's so much going on. There is so much.
I think that people.
I want to know why. Okay, I know the fact. I know it's a fact that there's no ending.
First of all, what's great is that we all watched this thing for 18 hours and we're discussing what the hell it meant.
Yeah.
That's the beauty.
Yes.
And if you don't dig that, you're not going to dig. Oh, there should be a season 4. I got news for you. Season 4 is not going to end with any. This thing is never going to be wrapped up.
Okay. I had a friend, a younger friend, who I've turned on to this. And the other day she said to me, she's only seen like, I don't think she's not caught up. She's like episode 9, I think. And she had one question about something. I said, look, just sit down and watch the rest of it, because there's so much more to this than you ever thought.
Well, I'm fascinated.
I cut you off there.
No, I'm fascinated by so many things when it comes to this series, one of them primarily being electricity. The running theme is electricity. Every single thing.
Yeah. When the kid gets run over, they zone up to the pylon.
We're electrical.
Electricity is the mode of transportation for the evil.
Yeah.
Because it's the thing that's connected to every house.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that connects every town to every other town. So I think of it, and these look, everything that we bring up is our own theory, right? Because the director will never tell us what it means. So this is all theory. But I see it as electricity is the highway that the negative force field of the universe uses to travel. I think the convenience store, when it moves around, everything that moves around, it can be here and there and the other place. And when Bad Coop is driving at night, he's basically following. He's following this stuff to get to where it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at it as a highway. It's a highway and also an intersection between dimensions that can be used to jump dimensions. And so that's what I see it as. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. But I see it as the highway for the negative forces. Because I think the whole thing is, I don't know if about is the right word, but I think the subtext of the whole thing is that there is a universal fight between good energy and bad energy.
Good and evil.
Good and evil. We call it good and evil. But I mean, that is more force fields. And then those force fields are made manifest inside of individual beings. And that was made possible as far as jumping dimensions, evil jumping dimensions, not evil itself, because before the atomic age, Hitler had already happened. So we know evil already existed. But this particular form of evil, because of our splitting the atom, when mankind gained the power of the universe, essentially, with these atomic explosions, caused a rip that allowed this particular form of evil into our dimension.
And that's what happened in episode 8.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
With the nuclear bomb.
When the bug goes into who we think might be Sarah Palmer's mouth as a young girl.
We don't know. The thing is, it doesn't matter. Everybody's like, who is that girl that went into her mouth? It's just a girl, I think, that it went into her mouth. But if you look, those eggs came out with Bob from what they call the mother. So that's the negative force energy. But there were hundreds, thousands of other eggs in that cloud. Mm-hmm. I think that was just an example of what happened. So it doesn't matter. Eventually, I mean, that wasn't the only girl that had a frog mouth. It was just an example of when it did happen.
Should he not have tried to save, to go back in time and save Laura from being murdered? Should, or is the fact that he did that why they got zapped into another dimension?
Well, I think both. And I was watching again last night. I really concentrated on after the big fight, the big showdown, when he goes to the door and he meets Philip Jeffries again. Mm-hmm. And then Jeffries shows basically that what we've seen as an eight all this time is really an infinity loop, right? Takes the owl ring insignia, mm-hmm. and that comes apart and comes back together into what seems like an eight, but it's really an loop of infinity. And then inside of it, mm-hmm. there's a little ball rolling around in different places in the infinity. And when he walks through there, that's when he's able to access that. Now, he is now, I think, he is in the same situation that Philip Jeffries. So Philip, there's the Garland Briggs, Philip Jeffries, they identified this negative force and through good intentions are trying to fight against it. And what, so I think that what we found out at the very end of Dale Cooper, what year is this?
Right.
He's beginning the journey to kind of nothingness that Philip Jeffries yep. was on. But we didn't see that journey. All we saw in Fire Walk With Me is him stumble into that office and go, you know, but he didn't know what year it was. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if Philip Jeffries doesn't know the year in the movie Fire Walk With Me. There's something called the missing pieces that's very important.
I think it's the Fire Walk With Me movie. When he
no,
comes
and it's
in-
from the movie, but there's a longer sequence of the David Bowie thing in the missing pieces, which is outtakes from the movie. And I can't remember if it's that or not, but one of them, Bowie is near a calendar, and he's, what year is this? And so I really think that what we're seeing and what happened at the end of part 18 was the beginning of what happened to Philip Jeffries as he got lost in himself. And we haven't really jumped to it yet, but I mean, while it's in my mind, I think that he went through that and then he jumped into the infinity loop, basically, where Jeffries is. And good people can do what they can to try to fight this negative force in the universe, but the mother, the negative force, apparently has the ability, every time you get really, really close
to where
you can get close and do something about it, apparently Judy, the force,
changes the game.
No, has the ability to pluck you out of where you are in that infinite
right,
loop.
She's changing the playing right, field, basically.
And then put you somewhere else in the infinite loop. And then if you do this enough times, you first begin to lose your own sense of awareness and who you are and what you are. And then Philip Jeffries eventually loses his body. Now, if David Bowie was still alive, would that have been part of the story? Probably not. But again, that was a way of Frost and Lynch using the fact that Bowie wasn't alive anymore.
So the Judy that got shot isn't the actual Judy. The actual Judy was inside of the Asian lady with the no eyes.
Which Judy got shot?
No, you're talking about Diane.
Diane
was inside the...
Diane was a tulpa the whole time.
All right.
A creation of something somewhere, the Black
Lodge.
Why,
that's why tulpas, when they get killed, they just go whoop
okay.
into the air.
Also, right. by the way, that's the way Laura left the room. The same way that the way Laura left
right.
the Red Room was the same way that that Diane zapped out of that.
So then the real Diane is trapped inside of the Asian lady.
Until she's freed. We think. And then she leaves
him behind.
Well, no, we think. I mean, what appears to be, I mean, if you could look at it one way. So in episode, I think it's part three, it starts out with him in that weird purple place.
Yeah.
And that's the first time you see the eyeless woman. Now, she does seem to be trying to help him. She can't communicate.
And somebody's banging.
Yes.
I never put two and two together to work out where that banging was.
Some
later.
People think that was going on at the same exact time that the people were being killed from the box. And that was the noise. Because the other girl who looked like Ronette, I don't know if it was, keeps saying, "Mother's coming, mother,"
yeah, yeah.
you know, and there's mm-hmm. the banging that's going on. But the eyeless woman is trying to help Cooper in some way. She's trying to communicate with him there. And then she falls off. I think It's really hard once you get deep into it. This is my speculation. I think that there is a grounding of quantum physics here.
Mm-hmm.
And when people get lost on, well, it's different timelines, it's actually every... I think their point, Lynch's point, and Frost 2 maybe, is that everything is happening at the same time in one dimension. You know, if you followed this all the way through, you know, that day that you played softball that's in your memory from when you're 8 years old is happening somewhere.
Right.
And
especially when you think about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, quantum physics is so weird that even physicists don't, they follow the math logic, but they can't necessarily understand it. But at the bottom of it, you know, basically the idea that anything that is possible does happen in some dimension.
Yeah.
And if you could cross dimensions, you're not really in different timelines. You're in different dimensions where it's kind of like you and it's kind of like here, but it's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the end. I don't know what Diane was, because you can't forget that when they pull up to that motel room,
she sees herself.
So is the one in the car the real her? Is the one that she sees in the parking lot the real her?
When he wakes up in the morning and gets the letter, it's addressed to Richard from Linda, right?
Right, right. And that's the giant first says in the first scene of the return to Cooper, Richard and Linda, two birds, one stone. And then Cooper tells, Cooper had told Gordon Cole 25 years earlier, I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone. Now that thing, let me just say this. I'm dominating here, and I'm sorry.
Maybe they're both tulpas.
They could be. Well, I don't think so. I think that Dale Cooper, after he walks through that Philip Jeffries thing, is now in the infinite loop.
Okay.
Now remember this. This is a small thing that people don't seem to remember, because I watched it the second time. Before he walks through that door, he tells Gordon and Diane not to follow him. So why is Diane there afterward?
Oh, you're right.
Gordon's not there.
Yeah.
I think when he walks out of that red, he says, don't follow me. He goes to the boiler room. He walks into the thing. He's in the red room. He's with Philip Jeffries. Then the red room, and he ends up back in the red room, and Leland says, fine, Laura. And then he's back out, and then Diane is there.
They're in the car.
Right. First he meets her. He meets her out in the woods, and he says, are you really Diane? Are you really Cooper?
Oh, that's right.
You know? And then they end up going and doing the other thing. So the idea is we don't know who's real and who's not real. I suspect that Dale Cooper is Dale Cooper as much as Philip Jeffries is Philip Jeffries at this point. And
the facsimile.
I don't know. Because, you know, when he ends up in that diner, what I wanted to say was, when this show ended on Sunday night, I had the same reaction that a lot of people had. I don't swear often on this medium, but I will now, because I'll be honest with you. I yelled, what the fuck?
Texted me too at the same time.
When he said, what time, what year is it? And then it was over. But then I noticed the next day that what was haunting me about the whole show wasn't the showdown. The showdown was cool, but it was a showdown. What was haunting me the next day, the way really great Lynchian stuff does, was the last hour from the time he walks through the stuff. But when I was watching it the first time, you know, you're looking at the clock, there's only 20 minutes left. How are they going to do this? This is almost over. They're driving and driving driving.
Even though we said at the beginning of this, when you watch Lynch, you immerse yourself, you're not necessarily looking for answers.
Yeah.
I think all of us wanted some kind of answer.
Yeah.
That sex scene was way too weird.
Yes, but I watched it a second time, and I can't tell you I know what was going on there.
Mm-hmm. No.
But the first time I was like looking at the clock, okay, come on. Second time I'm like, there's something going on here. That's actually a great scene.
Yeah.
Laura Dern looking up in the sky, trying to cover his face. He has no emotion. No emotion.
I thought we were back to bad Cooper for
a minute. that's the weird thing. The person who emerges appears to have elements of that coldness in him, but he's still doing good. He's helping the waitress. He's trying to get Laura back home. So when he wakes up and it's Richard and Linda, he never buys it. He goes, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And after he leaves a hotel room that's not the same.
Different hotel.
And so the
different
first
car.
So the first thing you think is, okay, this is weird Lynchian stuff. The hotel's different than he leaves than he walked in. And then later on second thing, I'm thinking, Well, how do we even know it's the same day?
Yeah.
Just because the edit goes from inside of a hotel room and you walk out of a different hotel room doesn't mean necessarily it's the same day. He could be all over there. That night they had together isn't necessarily in the same dimension or time frame or anything, because he just leaves there. Although he does stop in his car, he does look back at the hotel quizzically, but he walks right to the car, which isn't parked where he parked it, and it's a different car. And he seems to kind of know where he's going. He's looking for Judy. He finds Judy, the sign, Eat at Judy's. And so that was really haunt as I looked at it the second time and was able to just enjoy it as a David Lynch film. I am not looking at the clock, knowing what was going to happen. Now just, you know, just being immersed in it. I enjoyed it a lot more. But this is the thing. I was trying to explain this to my wife. You can't be too cool with Lynch or else it won't work, right? So he's, you know, going in that he subverts expectations. But if I go in with it going, well, I'm not going to believe anything because he's just going to turn it upside down anyway, it doesn't work. So he actually, even though I know he subverts expectations, he works up the expectations. I'm taking you home. I mean, at that point, when he was pulling her out of the woods, I'm taking you home, and the classic theme is playing. I mean, you could hear Twin Peaks fans applauding all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And then something happens.
I was,
you know,
yeah,
people go,
when they inserted New Cooper now, 2017, into that scene where she sees something in the woods when she's losing her mind with James Hurley.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is complete genius. Because that was never written originally.
It was never written. And and they did a good job of like putting a wig on her and younging her up for that, because that was pretty believable.
Yeah, she was kind of blurry when he was leaving her.
But it reminds me of my buddy Kevin Kinney once said this to me. So like, fans of Driving and Crying, one of the things they love to talk about with each other is the shows are never the same. And then he did a show at the Tabernacle, and it started out as kind of a greatest hit show. And then he had a lot of friends on. They did blues. They loved, and a lot of fans were pretty angry about it because they're going to the Tabernacle. They expect hits, sure. You know, all our, you know, not that they have a million hits, but as the fan base,
right,
the great songs they love. And he said after that, you know, the fans love to talk about how great we are because we never do the same show twice. But in reality, they kind of want to see the same great show they saw last time. And I think that Lynch fans, we love to talk about the fact that he subverts our expectations, but then in the moment we get angry that he subverted our expectations. And I'm just reading something here where Mark Frost liked a tweet of somebody else who tweeted as a fan idea that said part 17 was the ending of season 3. And part 18 is a new beginning, a new mystery.
Yeah, I can see that.
And, now, you've mentioned
Mark Frost liked it.
Yeah.
So maybe there will be more.
I don't think we're done.
But I will tell you this. We may not be done, but if he's in this infinite loop, if Cooper is in this infinite loop, still dealing with tulpas and doppelgangers, and you don't know what's up and what's down, whatever it is that comes next, whether it's a Showtime movie or an 8-part series or something, it's not ever going to be tied up.
No.
Because he's inside of an infinite loop.
Unless he somehow can get pulled out of that.
But how? You can never get pulled outside of infinity. There's no way Jeffries can come back. You know, I think that this is a way that the negative force keeps it. The idea seems to be that there's a good force, there's a negative force in the universe. But the negative force kind of has the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is Cooper in this infinite loop, Laura Palmer is too, because she has no recollection of anything to do with Twin Peaks in her former life that we know, or lack of life.
Well, supposedly, but what happens at the very end?
But
she
at the very
hears
end,
her mom yelling Laura from the pilot back in 1990,
yeah,
and she gets some knowledge and starts screaming.
They don't even explain the dead guy in that character's house.
Hey, dude.
But they will.
Maybe.
In season 4.
Dude, they didn't explain the box.
In New York.
That was like the beginning of they didn't explain Red. They didn't explain Audrey.
Right.
You know?
Audrey's dance.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
I mean,
Audrey's dance is going back to the first season.
Mm. I expected 17 to start with a little bit of explanation of the mental asylum or the dream that Audrey was in.
Yeah.
Because that was the last thing we saw in 16.
Yeah.
But I think Laura, like Cooper, like you said earlier, not different dimensions. It's stuff that's going on all at the same time.
Right. Yeah, but that would be across dimensions. Now, I disagree. I think that the Laura that he finds there is that's her life.
Yeah.
Now, by him doing what he's doing, and at the very end, maybe she's starting to trip a little bit on the thing. But I think that you got to remember, he said past dictates the future. You can go to the old conundrum about time travel even. You know, we see the body vanish. So she wasn't killed. Well, if she wasn't killed, Dale Cooper never comes to Twin Peaks. If Dale Cooper never comes to Twin Peaks, there's never a doppelganger. But there's never a bad Coop. There's never a, you know.
To follow that logic, he goes back in time, saves her life. She never dies. The dead body thing vanishes. What that's done is created a new dimension.
A new dimension. And also, there's that scene where Sarah, her mother, is
punching the film or the picture.
Right after that happens is when she disappears from his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So whether she's possessed by the mother, the negative force, and as, you know, sort of doomed her or whatever to this other kind of thing. But the interesting thing is, though, the person who is Laura is still having a shit time of a life.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, okay, yeah, she saved her life.
She just killed somebody in her house because he was probably beating her up.
Oh, no, maybe she did, maybe she didn't. You know, some things I forgot about. I know we got to go. We can't do this forever. But when he comes to the door in Odessa, Texas, and she's on the other side, and he yells, FBI, she opens the door and says, did you find him? Did you find him?
That's right.
So something's going, and the reason she's got to get out of town, you know, it seems obvious maybe she killed this guy, but why, if you killed somebody, why would you open the door to the FBI if you know that you're guilty
and ask,
did you find him?
Who killed Laura Palmer's husband?
Here's the other thing. The whole time Cooper has that conversation with her at the door, the body's in plain view. We just can't see it in the shot yet.
Right, so right. Yeah, then he turns and sees it.
Yeah.
It doesn't deter him.
No.
An hour to digest all of this and to regurgitate it is not enough time.
No.
But I
know. You're
this.
Starting to fade, boy.
No, I'm not fading.
Oh.
I just, you know, I want to keep it at an hour. But
no, yeah.
Jesus, if that's the new season, which I'm hoping for, in the infinite loop, you can go anywhere with it.
You can go anywhere.
All bets
and
are
again,
off.
The people's expectations. The guy who did The Sopranos, whose name right now I can't for the life of me remember, even though I should. That show didn't manage expectations well either. Everybody wanted it to wrap up. It wrapped up early in that episode, and then it just, boom, it's done.
Yeah.
They go into a restaurant.
I love the end of The Sopranos.
I did too.
Personally.
Isn't that another one where, I didn't get on The Sopranos ride, but just knowing about it, isn't that one that people appreciate more now than when it dropped?
Yes.
Yeah.
And because, again, they just go to eat at a restaurant, and a guy comes out of the bathroom, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's all this drama.
Life goes on.
Yes.
There's all these little bits and pieces leading up to that restaurant scene where you think, oh, this family's getting off at any minute, but like individually.
Just like the show started. It picks up in the middle of something that's going on,
right,
and it ends in the middle of
something
that's
going on. Which is brilliant. I love that. I love slice of life. Exactly. I love, I love all that. So, we'll see if there's more. There's a book that's coming out called The Final Dossier.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody hasn't, that's interested in all this, if you haven't read The Secret History of Twin Peaks that Mark Frost put out, I think last year, it's a real interesting thing. Basically, Tammy is Gordon Cole. Somebody was called the archivist, which I believe is probably Garland Briggs, of everything known about the mysteries
the world
of this area of the world, Twin Peaks in particular. And it's a bunch of information that they found that was put together by someone called the archivist. It comes into contact with the FBI. The book starts where Gordon Cole is sending memos to Tammy saying, go through this and tell us what you think. And the whole thing, as you read it, is like you're going through a dossier with different material, and then Tammy is writing what she thinks. And this thing is wild. I'll just tell you this about Secret History of Twin Peaks. it goes back to, I believe, was it Jefferson?
When you were saying Abe Lincoln, you were saying Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin, and I can't remember if it's Washington or Jefferson. Know about this, and Lewis and Clark stumble upon it when they're out there. And if you remember that very funny scene with Wally Brando, he mentions going across this great
Michael
land,
Cera.
Lewis and Clark and whatever. And so the owl ring in The Secret History of Twin Peaks is found by Lewis, And he sends it, I believe, to Jefferson or Washington. So the owl ring like is known about by the founding fathers.
Oh, wow.
And the whole thing builds up until you get to modern times, whenever. And there's two books coming out. One, I think the first one's going to be called The Final Dossier, which I would imagine is going to be kind of in the same style that The Secret History of Twin Peaks is. And then there's a book about the Bookhouse Boys, which they didn't get into in The Return.
No, something that old Sheriff Truman had, wasn't it? With,
but the supposedly Carl Rodd, the Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
That character supposedly is one of the original Bookhouse Boys. And by the way, before we go, I just want to point this out.
You're going soft, Gordon.
Not where it counts, pal. Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
Is 90.
Yeah.
He's 90
and
years old.
He's got a new movie, too. Which
he's got a new movie. Awesome. David Lynch, is, I think, makes an appearance in it.
Yep.
So what I liked about a couple things about this that we haven't talked about. You talked about the style, the deliberate style of it. I love the way, and even at the very end when I yelled, what the fuck, David Lynch, it's not a matter that he doesn't pander. He does not know how to.
Right.
It is impossible
yeah.
for David Lynch to pander. And I think a lot of this was on the commentary a little bit. Some people have, there's a theory that the whole thing with the glass box was some sort of commentary on how we watch TV. And that's why it started that way, where nothing really happens. And, you know, you're waiting for something to happen that nothing really happens. He famously at one point showed a guy cleaning a floor for 2.5 minutes while green onions played in the background. I want to say it's a middle finger. But what you mentioned earlier about how old shows would have a two-shot and kind of hang there, or one shot and kind of hang there, and now they just keep moving. I remember that show Homicide, or it was just like where everything just
cut.
And you, it panders to your sense of, you know, easily being bored.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not do that. Like, apparently, you know, if you're casual and you're not into this, just go away, because we're going to tell this story.
Yeah, there's no instant gratification going on.
I haven't seen everything that's been on TV, but I'm pretty sure no story has ever been told this way. And I'm so appreciative of that. If it never happens again, I'm appreciative to Showtime for putting up the money. It was a pretty low budget, and I think a lot of the budget was thrown into episode 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were wonderful CGI. All of that was, you know, there was nothing about that was footage. That whole nuclear blast was all original.
It looks so real.
It was original. It was done in CGI, and I feel like a whole lot of the budget went to that.
Got a light.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a lot of the other effects were kind of goofy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thankful that it happened. I'll be studying it for years to come. I changed my office.
I want to read these books now.
Yeah, I changed my office so I could put a theater back where it was in my basement, so that when the Blu-ray comes out, I can watch. Because, you know, I get it on, I got the internet, and you can see the little sort of ghosting and stuff.
Yeah.
To see it, like, in full Blu-ray, I'm just happy that it happened. I hope there's more.
Do you need it in Blu-ray?
I wanted it. I want
it as best.
Can you imagine?
I've been watching it on the big 4K that I have, and it was just like.
Do you get it? You got good cable. I'm getting mine through internet. And so you get that ghosting stuff in really dark scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to see it. In beauty and
nine-year-old TV, so maybe I need to update.
Also, another, and then we can go. The sound is very important to David Lynch.
Yeah,
always.
You don't watch his stuff through a little TV with the sound. He sculpts the sound. Like, if you don't have speakers, the whole Philip Jeffries thing plays completely different.
A lot of the great thing about the season was the bands that played at the Double R. Yeah. And if you look at the credits, David Lynch co-wrote a lot of those songs. And introduced the world to some great new artists and people like Nine Inch Nails and Trent Reznor. And I cried when Eddie Vedder showed up.
That was a good song.
By the way, I don't think that the Roadhouse is real. I think the Roadhouse is like the convenience store. Eddie Vedder goes and plays someplace.
Right.
I think that there's red curtains behind it. I think it's a portal that's never really been explained.
Yeah, the way they have the guy intro and the axe, too, that's all.
That ZZ Top scene.
Yes.
Audrey's Dance.
That's why some people think Audrey's dreaming and she's hearing like a radio, because you do that in your dreams, right?
Right.
If you hear a song, you create a visual. All questions to be or not to be answered in the future.
Let's hope that we get another season.
I'd love it.
All right, if you didn't see it, go watch it. God damn it! What's
now that
wrong
we've spoiled,
you?
Now we've spoiled the whole damn thing.
Yeah, you can't spoil what.
Thanks, Timmy.
Infinite.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Thank you guys for doing this.
Thank you.
This has been episode 2 of Film Buffs with Eric Von Hessler and English Nick Parsons. We will be back on Monday with an all new episode of Radio Labyrinth. Until then, please remember to keep it canon. I'm sure David Lynch would keep it canon.
Two Faces Radio.